afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Elodie Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today's Wednesday, September 13th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hello, Melody.
We have Wendy Wilson joining us today, but first we'll do a quick rundown of the markets today, and certainly it's a type of market that we're going to run through real quick today. But a little pressure on gold, down $10 at $1,322. You have silver down 16 cents at $1,782. Platinum followed gold, down 10 at $983. And palladium fell even further, down 17 at $939. Couldn't quite gather why palladium was up earlier in the week, up $22. So it's just losing those gains, which didn't make sense at all. But hey, when markets are rigged, it's very difficult to make a sense out of how something might perform. The USDX today was stronger, 0.55 at 92.47, and oil was up 1.13 at 49.36. And the paper markets, hold on to your hats, records 22,156, up 37 points. The NASDAQ was up 6 points, 6,460, and the S&P was up 1.8 at 24.98, 2,498. 10-year yield continues to climb, up 0.02 at 2.20%. Pressure on the euro, of course, down 0.69 at 1.19. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit why these currencies are doing what they're doing. And I think the one word we can say is China. We're going to blame it on China, but certainly...
Can't we blame it on Trump?
We'll blame it on China.
We'd get attention from the mainstream media if we blamed it on Trump.
Perhaps we would. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we would.
Good PR.
But the reporting on China has been very quiet. And, of course, you know, with everything going on with North Korea, you don't know how much of all of this all plays together, you know, with tit-for-tat type of a thing. But we'll talk about that here after the first segment of the program, because first we have Wendy Wilson joining us from Apothecary Herbs. Good afternoon, Wendy.
Good afternoon, Melody, and hello, Al.
Hello, Wendy.
I thought we'd talk about science is taking, guess what, a look at some natural prostate therapies. Oh, man, who knew, right? You know, because patients are growing a little weary of the early detection tests and drugs and surgery that doctors offer for prostate disease. And natural physicians have for thousands of years been utilizing organic sources to help the body heal itself, and the prostate's no different. Now, the sooner you do preventative treatments and lifestyle changes, the easier it is to correct imbalances and to help areas like the prostate. But we're going to take a look at this recent published research on science applying natural medicine for improving your prostate health. But first, I want to look at some of the statistics. According to the National Cancer Institute, they say prostate cancer has become the number one cancer for men, and at some point in their lives, about 11.6% have a risk of developing prostate cancer. So roughly about 120 men out of 100,000 get diagnosed with prostate cancer each year, and out of that, 20 men out of 100,000 die from the disease. Now, in 2015, we were told 3 million Americans had been diagnosed with prostate. A lot of people. It's a whole lot of people. So early prostate disease may not even produce any symptoms, so you may not know you have a problem. But so the prostate gland surrounds that urinary tube, which carries urine away from the bladder and out of the body. And a young man's prostate is about the size of a walnut, but slowly can grow larger as he ages. Now, some symptoms of enlarged prostate would be urinary hesitancy or weak urination, urinary blockage or leakage, difficulty starting urination, or an unsteady urine stream, or exaggerated effort to start urination, frequent urination, especially at night. You may even see blood in the urine, or an inability to feel like you emptied the bladder. Of course, sexual problems come along with an enlarged prostate gland and also can invite the risk of cancer. Some other symptoms could be pain and burning during urination, semen can be found in the urine, and a person can experience hip, back, or pelvic pain as well. So, but modern medicine, you know, just blames it all on genetics or lifestyle. And I tend to agree that if we have a diet heavy in the animal fats and a lot of inactivity, where we have a sedentary lifestyle, that could raise your risk of prostate issues. So I bet you know what they prescribe, don't you, Al, Melanie, for prostate problems these days?
Probably an operation will cost you about $5,000 or $10,000. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you're close. Well, your doctor actually will decide if you have a prostate problem after he runs some tests. He'll do a physical exam, maybe an ultrasound and blood test, and they'll look at your PSA, which is your prostatic-specific antigen level. It's supposed to give them a snapshot of the prostate health. And your doctor may even want to do a biopsy if he suspects there's cancer. And there, a second biopsy may also recheck the first biopsy. But each biopsy costs about $1,200. So if the cancer is concerned, the doctor's going to recommend surgery to remove the whole prostate and any nearby tissue. And after that, you know, chemo and radiation and a lot of hormone therapy is also going to be prescribed in an attempt to keep the cancer from coming back. So if you ask, you should ask about all the risks to these procedures, because statistics show 1% of men die from the operation. The rest of them get deep venous thrombosis or leg clots, increased risk of stroke, and also heart attack and death can be a precursor from this type of surgery. Also, hernia risk is high, so you can't lift anything heavy, and also your doctor doesn't want you to damage the connection between the bladder and the urethra that could cause more long-term complications. So you got wound infections and catheter infections on top of all this risk. Of course, after that is all done, the men say they suffer from incontinence, impotence, very common side effects. Less than 5% of the men have total control of their continence, and a lot of them complain of they don't get their sexual potency back. About 32% say that. So then there's all these drugs, you know, that they're on for prostate health after that, and they have a lot of side effects, like they produce weakness and fatigue, dizziness and fainting, blood pressure problems, headaches, nasal congestion, that's weird, but also ejaculation and semen issues that also can affect the bladder. So it takes about 6 to 12 months for any of those drugs, if they're going to work at all, to give any benefits. So you have to be on them long term before you see any results. Any questions so far?
Sounds like a racket to me. I mean, take these drugs for 6 to 12 months and we'll find out if they work or not.
Yeah,
I don't know about that. How about I write you a check that's post-dated for 6 to 12 months? See if you can cash it or not.
As you know, in modern medicine, there are no returns. There's no guarantees at all. Well, let's talk about this new research, because these were research scientists at the University of Texas in Austin, because more patients are asking their doctors, hey, don't you have any natural solutions for this prostate or even other conditions? People are asking for natural stuff. So, you know, science has taken a stab at finding out if there's any natural remedies discovered or undiscovered that actually make a difference, especially for the prostate and prostate cancer. So the research team at University of Texas found several compounds in foods and spices that seem to deter prostate tumor cell growth. And so they looked at plant-based chemical compounds as a whole instead of actually testing isolated ones. And what they discovered is, hey, these chemicals left as a compound provide specific... Sorry, my dog's going off here. They provide specific action to shrink prostate tumors. So, I was kind of like excited about that, because typically scientists like to isolate everything and chop it up and dissect it. So here's a quote from Stefano Tizzani. He was a professor at the Department of Nutritional Science, University of Texas. They said, after screening a natural library of these compounds, we developed an unbiased look at combinations of nutrients in foods and have a better effect on prostate cancer than existing drugs. Now, that's a huge statement.
Yeah, they said, I know. How long would it happen?
Yeah.
It's going to be unemployed.
He said the beauty of this study is we're able to apply this and inhibit tumor growth in animals like mice without any toxicity. So they're excited about that. So what you may be asking, well, what foods were they looking at? Well, the Texas research team looked at these following foods. These are the medicinal benefits from them. They looked at apples with the peel on them. You got the pectin in the peel. Also, the red grapes for the resveratrol compound in them, as well as turmeric spice for the curcumin compound, and also green tea and rosemary herb. So they tested about 142 of these compounds, and they discovered that the nutritional compounds in the whole food reduces, get this, inflammation of the prostate, deters infection of the prostate, and enhance the proper immune system response with regard to prostate health. It also inhibits existing tumor growth, and they still want to modify this, which was really shocking at the end. I was all excited, but then they said, we need to modify these compounds a little bit and to make them more potent than what is offered in nature. And I thought
more
to myself,
patentable too.
So that's what they want to do. They want to prevent cancer cells from getting what they need to grow by using the herbs, of course, but in concentrations beyond regular limits. Long-term key, though, to addressing a sick prostate really is looking at your lifestyle, to exercise, periodic cleanses, and in combination with your medicinal herbs. So it's, just like you do maintenance on your car or your furnace, you got to do some upkeep on yourself and think ahead. Also, when balancing the male hormone system also helps. It's a big plus, especially if your cancer's not hormone dependent, because that helps support the system that manufactures the hormones that affect the prostate. So majority of men don't know that they can cleanse their prostate and reduce the risk of this type of disease. And here are some of the frequent questions that I get a lot from guys is, should I cleanse the prostate even though I don't have a prostate problem? Well, based on these statistics from the Cancer Institute, you're going to get prostate cancer at some point. So a cleanse is a nice regular maintenance as a prevention measure. Also, people say, well, how often should I do that? Well, good routine is twice a year as a prevention. If you have a sick prostate, you could do it as often as every 3 months. And so you could take your time with it. And for extremely tough prostate problems, you may have to do two cleanses back to back. So you just a little bit more time with a cleanse. Instead of 2 weeks, do 4 weeks. So there's a lot people could do out there. And I would also say don't forget about the dandelion root, because Windsor University in Quebec, Canada discovered by accident in 2012 that dandelion root kills all known cancer cells. So actually, I know a woman that got off her toxic chemo treatments and drugs and started using dandelion and some medicinal herbs to cleanse, and her voice totally changed. Before, she was really weak and whispering, and she's now feeling very robust and healthy, and she's got strength in her voice, which, that's an indication. Their body's telling you something there. Here's a quote from Carolyn Hamm. She's a medical doctor at Windsor Regional Cancer Center in Ontario, Canada. She said, dandelion root extract was the only thing that helped my patients with chronic monocystic leukemia. So, but Dr. Marion Pandy found that the dandelion worked on all known cancer cells, so not just leukemia cells. And there's something in it that the cancer uptakes and absorbs. Healthy cells don't bother with it, so it doesn't affect healthy cells, but the cancer cells, when they take up the dandelion, it makes them commit suicide and they die. So dandelion root grows just about everywhere in the globe, so it's not hard to find. Just don't spray it with Roundup. It's a valuable, valuable plant.
I can remember plucking dandelions out of the lawn when I was a kid.
Right,
and it seemed like there was no end to them, and they were probably worth more than the lawn.
Absolutely. We used to pluck them and blow, and those little parachutes would fly.
Oh, yeah.
Then, I did that. My grandfather have a fit because we were spreading the weed, And it's such a hardy plant. It grows in most zones all over the world. And dandelion isn't the only
amazing
herb that inhibits cancer. There's a lot of them. Ty Bollinger did a series on cancer cures last year or a year or two ago, and he went all over the place, and he was amazed at how many things actually can deter or reverse cancer. So it's not just dandelion root. There's a lot of things out there that do that. Some people look at blood root and arrowroot and poke root and combinations of things. All societies have their way, you know, of dealing with it. So
I think it's amazing that the dandelion is basically spread all over the world.
Right.
As a remedy.
Yeah, kind of like, you know, the creator knew you'd need it, you know. It's sort of like...
Yeah, I know. It's pretty amazing. It really is amazing. It's not like you have to go up, climb up into the Himalayas and
right.
there's a little valley up there where they grow something that's really great. No, it's all over. It's
well,
in your yard.
Yeah, the other weed that people see in their yard and they spray with the weed killer is plantain. And plantain has a little flowery stalk that comes up through the center and then a broad, flat leaves that grow low to the ground. And actually plantain, the Native American Indians would pick it and chew it to bruise it and slap it on poison ivy or bee stings or venomous bites, and it draws the oils from the poison ivy out and any venom that you have. So it kind of reverses the injury. So plantain.
Pretty amazing. Really is amazing. Tell me about this cleansing that you're I assume you have a cleansing product that you can...
Yeah. We actually, you know, if you do your system cleanses too, not just to cleanse for the prostate, but you take the cellular stress off the entire body when you cleanse those filtering organs like your bowel and liver and so forth. But there's a proper way to do it. But we do have a male cleanse package, and the upgrade package does include the prostate cleanse with it. They can get the prostate cleanse separately for, you know, time-to-time maintenance, or they could do their system cleanses. Most people fit them in twice a year. They pick a season, you know, spring, fall, winter, summer. Try to do your cleanses while you're not stressed around the holidays and while you're not on vacation. But they're gentle and effective, so you can still carry out your normal routine and go to work and whatever. But you know, once you do it the smart way, it's not rocket science, and it's not harsh. It's actually very gentle on the system.
Okay, you make it sound like there's more to it than just popping a pill.
Right. Well, I mean, I don't like pills. I don't like swallowing them. Okay. I like liquids and powders that you could add to juice and it becomes water soluble, because that means it's instantly being absorbed in the system. The body doesn't have to work hard to digest it, and you get more out of it. So it's more efficient. So that's why we specialize in liquids and powdered mixes at thepowerherbs.com. So the liquids also have a long shelf life of 10 years. The powder's about 5 mm-hmm. years. So you could stock up on some of your stuff if you know you're going to need it periodically, and it'll be ready when you are. So thepowerherbs.com. That's putting the power back in your hands. It's what it does.
Give us a little contact information, Wendy.
Sure. They could get a free product catalog from us at Apothecary Herbs by calling us at 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663, or visit us at thepowerherbs.com.
Thank you, Wendy. Very informative. We'll look forward to talking to you next weekend. And that was Wendy Wilson from thepowerherbs.com. You can reach her at 866-229-3663. Melody and I will be right back. Please stay tuned.
We will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to rule the world.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
You know, I was looking back. I wanted to do some numbers on the Mint State 64 $20 gold piece, as I wanted to see, I was following the price to see how it has adjusted since we've had this little bit of pressure on gold from $1,350 down to where we are today, $1,322. And they're holding up quite nicely. I basically saw a premium drop of $10 versus that drop from $1,350 to $1,322. So they're holding up very strong. Tells me demand is good. And the premium spread, and this is how the premium spreads widen. Remember, it was, what, $75 from a Gold Eagle coin price to a Mint State 64 St. Gaudens price. Well, that price didn't come down, so the premium is getting wider between the bullion and the numismatic coin, semi-numismatic coin, the pre-1933 coin. So still a great buy when you can pick them up when there's all a difference now. It is a $105 difference, but you can pick up the Mint State 64 $20 St. Gaudens for $1,490. $1,490, it's still a steal at these levels. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. And I believe we were going to talk a little bit. We had talked a little bit about the Bitcoin slide. We had Reuters reported today that Bitcoin slid by more than 10% today as investors sold the cryptocurrency after a warning by J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon. He said that it's a fraud and it's eventually going to blow up. Bitcoin, the original and still the biggest crypto, has been on a tear. It hit a record high just below 5,000 at the start of September after more than a five-fold increase in price. They started to fall last week. China has banned the issuance of new digital coins. The ICOs have fueled a rapid ascent in the value of all these cryptocurrencies from about $17 billion at the start of the year to a record close to $180 billion at the beginning of September. So Diamond's warning triggered a further 11% collapse in the price of Bitcoin, which had already lost around 15% of its value in 10 days. But he's just not the only one out. There's a whole line of market commentators that have been critical of Bitcoin and us. We've been critical, and I don't think Bitcoin or these cryptocurrencies will be much in the news come a year from now.
I don't doubt they're going to continue, but not there's not going to be the same kind of fever. We're going to see a blowout before this is done, and people are going to get burned, and they're going to be they may still be involved, but not to the same extent, not the same emotional commitment. I think you're right about Jamie Dimon. I think his comments and the fall of Bitcoin are more coincidental than cause and effect. And I think what we're really seeing, I mean, he gets credit for saying this and then it fell, but I don't know there's really cause and effect here, significant cause and effect. I think what we're seeing is maybe they're getting to a top. Maybe we're getting to a top where the people are being, wait a second, this is getting a little crazy. And they're starting to back off. We'll watch and see. But
you know, also, this was reported earlier this week, you had Chinese authorities, they're preparing to shut down the country's Bitcoin exchanges.
Yeah, yeah.
The policy shift in the world's number two economy shows how nations are wrestling with Bitcoin and its place in the financial system. Governments are not going to allow Bitcoin to compete with their fiat currencies. It really is that simple. And
The question is, can they stop them?
Well, you know, I think on the
I know
black,
they don't like
the
them.
Dark,
can they stop them, or can they supplant them and say, no, you can have a digital currency, but we get to run it, not these people at Bitcoin. We'll run it because we're the government and we know how to do these things. And
well,
of course, it's only a modest fee.
Well, I do believe that Bitcoin was really created by governments anyway. Whether it be ours or someone else's, but and they're going to still use it on the dark web of things. I mean, that's how your criminals launder money and so forth. So, yeah, eventually they're going to go in there and probably stop that. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about where the IRS is going after to find out how they can get in there and tax, how they can include
that's the whole idea. Scheme. Somebody's moving. Somebody's buying and selling stuff, and the government's not getting its cut.
So I don't think the IRS can enter into the dark web. You know, a lot of that dark web is drugs and pornography. This would probably be the...
It should be right at home.
You know, so... But...
the Department of Internal Revenue Service and Drugs and Pornography.
And I'm not a fan of Jamie Dimon at all. But... You know, it goes to show when they speak, they move markets.
Again, I'm not convinced. It may be so, but I think he was just one more straw on the camel's back. I think maybe the camel's back was getting ready to break. We shall see over the course of the next week.
He moved the market 15%, so I'm not saying he's going to move the market, you know, 90%, but...
We'll watch and see. It's part of the adventure of living in our interesting times.
And I agree. I think China's... comments eliminating and closing these exchanges probably had a bigger impact than Jamie Dimon.
Got the ball bouncing.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Perhaps. Got an article here on Trump vows to unlimited aid after Hurricane Irma, but Florida may not get it. This is from Newsweek. Now, we talked about this last week a little bit. Where are they going to get the money for the backup the hurricanes to support the people who've been damaged by the hurricanes? I'm not doubting that they can, but this isn't going to be an easy deal. Trump is promising unlimited aid, and we're going to take care of everybody. I don't know that that's going to happen. I can remember my hometown in northern Illinois was hit by a tornado in the 60s. I don't remember clearly if I said 1965. That might be approximately correct. I don't remember if that's true or not. But the town got hit by a tornado, and the government came in and set up their whatever they had to, we're here to help you and the rest of it. And I was too young to understand what was really going on. But what I remember is that people who talked about it over a period of months, in the end, the government didn't do anything except set up its little offices where you could go fill out the forms, and in the end, they didn't really offer much help. And the reason I remember that is because here we have, again, Newsweek article, Trump vows unlimited aid, but Florida may not get it. President Donald Trump promised Florida unlimited aid as Hurricane Irma ripped through the Sunshine State. Governor Rick Scott said in a Monday interview, but if his administration funds relief efforts the way it did last week for North Carolina, which is still recovering from Hurricane Matthew, which pummeled the state last October, the region will likely receive far less than what local government may expect from the federal lawmakers. North Carolina is set to receive $6.1 million from Trump's federal government nearly a year after the hurricane killed more than 20 people, dropped a foot of rain on the state. That's less than 1% of the $929 million that North Carolina had requested earlier this year. Right? They're asking for $929 million, and Trump is sending them $6 million, and we have to wonder why. And the reason what we talked about when we got into this topic last week, I think the government's too broke. I'm not sure that they've got the money. All right, now that sounds foolish and probably incorrect, but still, that's a suspicion that's crossing my mind. Democratic Governor Roy Cooper of North Carolina slammed Trump's administration for ignoring his statement in a written letter that reads, "Families across eastern North Carolina need help to rebuild and recover. And it is an incredible failure by the Trump administration and congressional leadership to turn their backs. Matthew was a historical storm. We're still working every day to help families return home and rebuild their communities. North Carolinians affected by the storm cannot be ignored by the Trump administration and congressional leadership." Trump similarly, this is not part of the letter, that goes on, says Trump similarly promised to spare no cost after Hurricane Harvey destroyed areas in Houston, saying the relief efforts could prove to be the most costly operation in American history. "Probably there has never been anything so expensive in our country's history." This is Trump speaking. "We've never done anything so historic in terms of damage, in terms of ferocity, as what we've witnessed with Harvey. As the total estimated cost of Harvey's destruction nears $100 billion, it remains unclear how Trump will be able to provide unlimited resources to Florida and other parts of the country, such as Puerto Rico. So far, Congress has allocated $15.3 billion for Harvey aid and sent the package to Trump's desk for approval." So the estimated cost is $100 billion. That's subject to, yeah, that's an estimate.
That's low.
Could go higher, could go lower, we don't know. But Congress,
it's always low, Al.
$15 billion. All right? There may be reasons for that. It may be that they can't. You can't just give them $100 billion today and rebuild the city next week. Maybe the money has to be rationed over a period of time. There could be reasons for it. But still, if you're facing $100 billion worth of damage and the federal government is offering $15 billion, that's 15% basically of the damages. This cannot be encouraging for the people of Houston and Florida. Can't be encouraging for them if they expect help from the federal government. But the reason I'm talking about this is, again, is the government broke? Is this simply something where people, the government doesn't see what's going on, doesn't realize what's going on? Do they have credible reasons for only handing out $6 million when people need nearly a billion?
My question now is, and this sounds kind of terrible, but how responsible is the government?
I don't know.
I mean,
are they obligated to kiss everybody's boo-boos, essentially?
But, you know, when people live in flood zones or they live around water, there are, and it's just not how much money the government has. People who do have flood insurance, the flood insurance of the government is broke. They had to borrow $25 billion. Now they have Harvey and Florida to deal with.
I know.
So, and they're already broke into the tune of $25 billion that they owe the government. So how much do we give them so they can pay their claims? How much do we give FEMA? FEMA's broke. What is the government, what are the taxpayers responsible for? Not government. What are the taxpayers
responsible
for? Do you have
any money, Melody?
For?
You're responsible to give that to the government because they have good ideas and great plans.
It doesn't mean to sound terrible that, you know, the government shouldn't. Your states, everybody wants things to go back to the states. Make the states more, you know, on their own. Give them more, you know, take things and give them back. Well, you know what? What about the rebuilding of their states? What about the responsibilities? What about the rainy day funds that they should be using to help rebuild? And if you need help, okay, states, we'll give you money, but it's a loan. You have to pay it back or, you know, something. I remember hearing an interview I think he was the mayor of Houston, and he said multiple times that Trump had promised him 90%,
mm-hmm.
90% of the expenses would be paid by the federal government.
We'll see if we can keep that promise, if Trump can keep that promise or not.
And I think he said it multiple times to make sure that everybody heard it. So when he doesn't get it,
he's going to be able to blame Trump. He'll don't blame me.
Trump, he'll be able to blame.
He promised. you know,
blame Trump. So, but yeah, the funds aren't there. We promised billions and billions of dollars. So how do you get your? He can't go any further. He can't help Florida. He can't help anybody else because he needs that money for tax reform if that's what he wants. So
there's a lesson here for everyone, and the lesson is, well, number one, you can't trust in these promises, which is to say debts. The whole system is built on debt. The whole thing is based on promises. We promise to back your bank account. We promise to back flood provide flood insurance. We promise to provide this, that, and the others. And the truth is, all you've got to carry you is somebody's promise, and history is showing us time and again that you can't rely on these promises, you can't rely on the debts, which brings us back to standard conclusion on this program. If you want to protect yourself, you're probably not a good idea to rely on the federal government, probably not a good idea to rely on the state government. Maybe it's necessary, whether you like it, you don't like it, to do your provide your own protection. And you're going to need something other than promises to get you through really difficult times. You're going to need some tangible assets. Could be food, water, drugs, medical supplies, guns, bullets, gold and silver. Get something tangible and have it at hand. Or if you want, you can wait for President Trump to come help you if push comes to shove.
I don't know what the cost estimates for Irma. There was one that would also cost for Irma about $100 billion. So both of them together, they're estimating about $200 billion in damage.
Well, that's not a terrible sum. That should be doable. We were handing out, during the Great Recession, we were handing out $80 billion a month as part of the stimulus program.
Yeah, but we weren't $20 trillion in debt at that time either.
Sure we were. Sure we were. Nearly so.
No,
but they were still handing out $80 billion a month during part of the Great Recession to stimulate the economy.
Yeah, it started
at 10
trillion.
About two, did it for, I don't know, 10 months, a year. I'm not sure how long that program lasted. But $80 billion a month, that's not far from $100 billion a month, which is what they're looking for. We could do it then. We should be able to do it now unless something has happened to our financial structure. And that's the implication on all this. If we can't come up with what is really, compared to the Great Recession, a lousy $100 billion for Florida, a lousy $100 billion for Houston and Texas, why not? What is the problem here? And that's my question. And I don't have an answer, and I don't know what the problem is. But I'm bringing it to people's attention just to say, maybe it's a sign that the government is really broke. And technically, I think the government's been broke ever since it started really amping up the national debt. It's clear. I'll tell you something. If I was in a situation where I owed $20 million and I couldn't pay it, and I was having a hard time just servicing the debt by coming up on the interest on it, it would be evidence that I am in technical bankruptcy. You can't pay your debts, you're broke. You're bankrupt. Government appears that it may be in or near that condition. We're going to take a break for a couple commercials. Melody and I will be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again tonight? Each and every heart is...
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Okay, folks, I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom, Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
I just want to remind the listeners, Mint State 64, $20 gold pieces, a great buy at $1,490, 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And I just want to touch on a call I had earlier today. Kathy from Ohio called me, and she says, you two have been talking about, and I've been talking about Monex and the Larry Bates, all the crooks and deception and the frauds and the phony balonies out there in the gold and silver business. And she says, you wouldn't believe what I received today in the mail. She says, I received something from Lincoln Treasury. And, of course, it's, no connection to the U.S. Treasury whatsoever. And they were offering some sort of a bizarre state one-ounce silver bar. They call them numismatic coins.
A one-ounce bar?
Silver bar, yeah. Anyway, they were offering a one-ounce silver bar, and I guess it has the state's... Each state has their own little, state flower or whatever, state flag or representative of the state. And they were selling these 1 ounce bars, which is nothing more than a round. I mean, you can have any round imprinted with anything that you want. You just have to design the, draw the picture and take it and have it done. So it's no big deal. And but they were offering it for $59 for those who lived within the state.
How many did you buy?
8,000 of them.
Did you?
And those that were living outside the state, it cost a mere $134, if I got that correct. So, and I'll tell you what, though.
Oh my God! You're only paying an extra. Yeah. You mean if I wanted to buy one of these coins from Nebraska, I'd have to pay an extra $110-$120 over a spot to get a silver coin?
What a deal!
Because I'm in Texas.
What a deal! The sad thing is...
Yeah, I know they're going to get rich.
The sad thing is the amount of money that they put into the cost of producing these mail-outs and doing it and shipping it, they make money off of it or they wouldn't do it. So I went online and I Googled Lincoln Treasury. Well, of course, they have... more complaints than they have, positive comments and so forth. And the shipping takes months. And, it really truly is. If you have computers, just Google Lincoln Treasury and you can find out for yourself. And that is one thing. We do have the internet to source to find out about some of these gold dealers and the products and the complaints and so forth. I never became a member of the Better Business Bureau because, people can send in complaints as long as the owner responds, they get a good marking. I mean, it's just the bureaucratic, and it's like, what's the point? I've seen dealers who have, eventually went out of business that had, great ratings with the Better Business Bureau until the very end of things. So they don't prove anything to, not in this business. And, maybe some businesses it might be beneficial, but that's why I never became a member of the Better Business Bureau. And their response in Better Business Bureau really wasn't that bad. So again, it's just another, and if you look into their history and who owns it and so forth, I mean, it really is incredible with, the layers of owners, and it's very difficult to find the one who is responsible.
When you say the layers of owners, are you implying that the local Better Business Bureau is something like a franchise?
Well, I'm talking about this Lincoln Treasury.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the Lincoln Treasury. But, I've heard Better Business Bureaus. It's been a really long time. You can bribe them. You can pay them. You pay your fee. You sign up. And, I've known a lot of gold dealers that get great ratings on there as long as they respond to the complaint.
Yeah.
And,
you flunk if you get an F rating if you don't respond. Somebody complains, you get an F rating if they don't respond. It's not about whether or not you've been committing fraud. All right, you may have been defrauding this person, but if they send in a complaint, do you respond? If you do, they're going to give you a decent rating. If you don't, they're not really checking out to see if you're, And I can't say that that's true for all Better Business Bureau locations. I don't know, but I happen to know somebody who's bumping heads with the Better Business Bureau up in Oregon, and they've had a problem with it. And what it came down to is their adversary didn't respond to the questions, got an F, and he was responsible for some defamation, and the person complaining about the defamation kept at it. The defendant in this situation leaned on the Better Business Bureau and apparently threatened to sue him, and they simply dropped the whole complaint and buried it, made it disappear. All right? And nobody addressed it. Nobody addressed the fundamental issues. They said, no, we're not touching this. Hot potato. So I don't know that that's true for all Better Business Bureaus, but it is apparently true for at least one up in Oregon. And consistent with what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And speaking of Oregon, I believe it was Spokane. There was a school shooting up there today, and I know we have many, many listeners as we do broadcast out of that area. And although I think there is a day delay in the broadcast and so forth, so and that's something, too, that has really been taken out of the mainstream media with this new election, is really any type of, major shootings or anything like that. It's just a second page and so forth. All eyes are just so focused on Trump, they can't read or see anything else. I believe only one student was killed in Oregon. I think there was several others that were injured, and supposedly they did have the shooter, and that was the last of the information that I had prior to the program. But there was a big shooting in Texas. I think 9 people were killed over, I think, the Labor Day
football
weekend.
Yeah, it was a football game this last Sunday or whatever.
No, it wasn't. It was, from what I read, it was a... domestic.
Yeah, it was, but it was they were having, husband and wife were getting
separated.
Divorced.
Yeah, and she was having
the wife
a cookout.
Was having a party to get ready to watch the Cowboys game, and he came into the house and shot her and 7 or 8 other people, 7 or 8 of her friends.
And he did have a restraining order and everything else, which a lot of those restraining orders are just meaningless. But
no, they're just promises. Like I say, if you got a piece of paper, you got nothing. Okay, you are.
Well, people don't. Hey, I had restraining orders, against. But anyway, that's another story, another day. But something that hasn't been, and there was another one. I think it had 6 or 7 people that were shot. I think in August or something. So everything is just Trump. Everything has been the hurricanes, as it should be, but certainly a lot of other news is being ignored, too. Even the fires. I talk about the fires that have been going on in California and Idaho and Montana. You don't hear any news talk about that, report on those fires and the loss of land and the loss of animals and property.
All that'll be protected by the federal government, Melody.
I suspect.
They're going to provide them with unlimited funds, get them back on their feet.
What's next, Al?
I got an article here that's actually, it may be important. This is the head of the The headline of this abstract, of this, excuse me, this working paper from the Bureau of International Settlements, this is working paper number 656. And if any of you were interested, you could find this Bank of International Settlements, working paper number 656, released this month, August 2017. And the headline is, Demographics Will Reverse Three Multi-Decade Global Trends. All right? It's a 47-page document. I have not been able to read the 40s. Just found out about it maybe an hour before the program. Haven't been able to read it. Don't know for sure what's going on here, but I have read the abstract at the beginning of the program and at the beginning of the article. And again, this is working paper number 656 from the Bank of International Settlements. Now, this is as big as banking gets. These people should know what they're talking about. This is not Lincoln Treasury or something. These are people whose opinions are worth considering. It doesn't mean that they're right, but they are worth considering. This is valuable information. And it's in the abstract, it says, between the 1980s and the 2000s, the largest ever positive labor supply shock occurred, resulting from demographic trends and from the inclusion of China and Eastern Europe into the World Trade Center. Now, what are they talking about here? And I can't tell you. Again, I've only read the abstract. But I think what they mean by this positive labor shock, I think what they mean by that is a sudden rise in the supply of young, cheap labor available to produce goods for Western consumers. All right? And these were supplied by Eastern Europe and by China. And when you stop to think about it, this makes a lot of sense, really. All of a sudden, we had this influx of cheap labor. And we don't mean that the Chinese were moving to Europe or whatever, but they were a supplier. They became builders of products, and it created this labor supply shock. With that increase, the price of labor had to fall, and the profits of multinational corporations had to rise. And the article continues, it says, this led to a shift in manufacturing in Asia, especially China, a stagnation in real wages. Why did we have, and everybody knew this, we were buying things made in China, which means you could get them cheap from China. That means American labor, the price of American labor had to go down, or at least stagnate, and that's what they, it goes on, a collapse in the power of private sector trade unions. Yeah, that makes sense. We added a bunch of labor in China and Eastern Europe, and the private and the American trade unions and the European trade unions suffered a decline in power and a decline in wages. It meant increasing inequality within countries, but less inequality between countries. It meant deflationary pressures and falling interest rates. This shock is now reversing. As the world ages, meaning the demographics, we're becoming older and older and less young people, real interest rates will rise, inflation and wage growth will pick up, and inequality will fall. What they're saying, we're going to run out of laborers. We're going to have to pay them more or replace them with robots. It's hard to say, but they are arguing that because we are an aging world, we're going to have to employ, there will be less labor, and therefore the price of labor will go up, and the people who are working for labor's wages are going to see an increase in their standard of living. They go on and they say, what's the biggest challenge to this thesis? And the answer is, the hardest prior trend to reverse will be that of low interest rates, which have resulted in a huge and persistent debt overhang. Apart from some deleveraging and advanced economy banks, future problems may now intensify as the demographic structure worsens, global growth slows, and there is little stomach for major inflation. And they ask, are we in a trap where the debt overhang enforces continuing low interest rates so governments can continue to service the debt at minimum rates? Are we in a trap where the debt overhang enforces continuing low interest rates, and those low interest rates encourage yet more debt? All right? Be low interest, does it make more debt for us? More debt, does it create more of a problem? Are we caught in a trap here? They go on, they say, there is no silver bullet, but we recommend policy measures to switch from debt to equity finance. And that last line strikes me as almost astonishing. We, the Bank of International Settlements, recommend policy measures to switch from debt to equity finance. I don't know precisely what they mean, but what they apparently mean is they want to get away from debt-based monetary system, away from a debt-based economy, and move to economies and financial systems that are based on equity. And they are telling us equity is not debt. It implies that they are suggesting we move back to an asset-based monetary system. That's the way I'm reading it. It's not clearly spelled out. Could be misunderstanding, but if I'm correct in the way I'm reading it, the Bank of International Settlements says we recommend policy measures to switch from debt to equity finance. I think it means they're going back to gold and silver. Now, I don't mean it's going to happen this year, but this is an important institution. The Bank of International Settlements is an important and powerful institution. They appear to be recognized. I mean, they could say they're going to probably try to have equity finance based on, who knows, equity in stocks, equity in bonds, who knows. But to me, all that equity is just more paper debt. If we're going away from debt, we've got to get away from paper. In my opinion, we've got to go back to tangible assets like gold and silver. And if that turns out to be true, it means we are sitting at a point where it may take several years. Hard to say how fast this is going to happen. But we're sitting at a point where the demand for gold and silver is going to rise internationally, globally. And, you know, it assumes, and I'm assuming that the Bank of International Settlements knows what they're talking about. I'm assuming I know what they're talking about, and I'm understanding their arguments correctly or their abstract correctly. But they say get away from debt, go to equity. I think by equity, I think they mean assets, and they have to be including gold and silver. We're going to talk about this more probably. I'll see how much more of this I can read over tonight. And we'll see if we can get into this a little deeper tomorrow. We're out of time. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night. I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.